This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. Years ago, when people asked me what I did for a living, I told them I was a radio guy. And then I changed that to, I'm a broadcaster. And in the last few years, I've changed that to, I'm a content provider. Because I've done radio, I've done television, I've done print, and I've got a blog, and I tweet, and all those online things. But it occurs to me more and more that almost everybody in the world now is a content provider of some kind or another. Because when it comes to websites like Facebook, you're not just using their service, you're actually providing the content for that service. The problem is, when you're using that service, you didn't look through the fine print, and you didn't see what can they do with my content besides just putting it up on my status and my timeline and my photo albums and all the rest. And it's not just Facebook I'm talking about. Twitter, Pinterest, Craigslist, etc. My next two guests have looked into the fine print of you being a content provider by checking out what it is that's actually in those terms of service. They're both researchers at the Georgia Institute of Technology, Casey Fiesler and Amy Bruckman. Welcome to America Weekend.
Thanks, Paul. Good morning.
Casey, I'll start with you. What are we giving away when we click that without reading it?
You know, I would say that it's actually not quite as bad as it could be. A lot of the licensing terms that we provide, we found, are actually just what you need in order for them to be able to show your content on their website. So things like a worldwide license to reproduce and display only means that we can show people your content all over the world. Though occasionally some terms creep in there that might surprise you a little bit, like the right to commercialize your work, though that's actually pretty rare.
Yeah, Amy, we had a controversy just a few months ago with Facebook when they were being accused of using user photos in ads.
Right. I think most people would be surprised to find out that that was allowed in the license, and that is, in fact, something they were doing that surprised users. And the problem here is that, let me ask you a question, Paul. Do you read the terms of service before
Absolutely
you upload content
not. To the site? No, are you crazy? No, I don't. I'm just like everybody else.
That's right. And we know you don't. And it's not because you're lazy. It's because it would take too much time. And for most people, it's above their reading level. So the challenge here is that people are not aware of what rights they're giving away. And there's no reasonable way for them to become aware.
Casey, have you read them?
You know, I went to law school and I still don't read all of the terms of service. I'm pretty sure that no one really does. Because it would take you hours and hours and hours to read all of the terms and services of the rights of the websites that you use.
I looked through this report you published recently, and it talks about the number of words that are in the terms of service for various sites. For Google, it's 1,691 words. For Pinterest, it's over 2,200. For Twitter, it's over 3,400. For Facebook, it's over 4,400. For LinkedIn, it's almost 7,300 words in there. Amy, what is in there that is good for us as consumers? What protections are built in for us as opposed to the opportunities for these sites to exploit our work? What is there to protect us?
Well, you know, as Casey said, most of the terms are enabling the company to share the work in the way you intended it to be shared. There are some hidden gotchas, and we were surprised to find that some of the hidden gotchas are not on the big sites, but on the littlest ones. The big sites have big legal staffs and lots of people giving them feedback, and their terms tend to be more reasonable. Some of the really small sites we found, I think someone's cousin threw something together, and those are the ones that have terms that can sometimes be ridiculous.
All right. Casey, give me examples of some of the things that you found on the little sites.
Well, one of the site that actually had the sort of longest and most restrictive license was a tiny little fan fiction site, which basically said, we can do whatever we want with your work in any way that we ever want to, and you can never take your work back for all time. And that's the kind of thing that I guess you should look out to, especially if it's something like your creative writing that you're putting up on the web that you might be worried about someone using at some point.
No, we're not talking about somebody having their own blog and using a platform like WordPress or Blogger or something like that and deciding to post their creative writing there, are we?
Well, when you post something on WordPress, they do have licensing terms. Though usually it's more of what we were talking about with Facebook, where they can, you know, they have the right to display it. Because otherwise, if you don't give them some rights in your work, then they can't show it to people. And I would say that the more concerned you are about the work that you're posting, if you're a creative person who might want to sell your work eventually, then that's when you should actually read the terms of service, or at least the part that applies to that.
So, Amy, do these sites, the smaller ones in particular, do they get into the habit of distributing or perhaps even selling the work that is posted there by their users?
That is a very interesting question. Mostly, I think they're just doing what you'd expect, which is to post it and try and run their site the way you expect. And I don't think they necessarily intend all the ridiculous terms that are in their legal agreements. But every case is different.
But have you found any that license the work that people post to third parties?
Yes, we have. And for some companies, that's part of their business model.
So, Casey, what do we as users have to do here? Because if you read through it as a person who graduated law school and couldn't understand it, what's the average person supposed to do?
That's a very good question. You know, as I said, I think that if you're posting work that you're particularly concerned about how they can use it, then you can try the best that you can to understand what the licenses mean. Some of them you can at least parse out if you actually read it. Or you can always, if you're concerned, send an email to the website and ask them to explain it to you. Now, I don't know for sure that they would, but I would like to think so.
Amy, can we opt out of the terms of service?
No, you cannot opt out. You cannot negotiate. If you use the site, you've agreed to their terms of service, and that's something you have to be aware of. There's some wonderful work by Lori Craner at Carnegie Mellon University making something like a nutrition label for privacy policies. When you think about nutrition, you realize that if you just read the list of ingredients, you'd never know how healthy a food was. So we created a standardized format that people know how to read and interpret. Lori has done that for privacy policies, and I think we need to do that for intellectual property policies, to have a label that people must put up that consumers know how to read and understand. This site is not the same as this one, and some of the sites you have to be more careful on than others.
So, Amy, did you find any sites that put it in simple language that we could understand?
Absolutely. Give a big shout out to Pinterest for writing the most readable policy. They did a great job writing something that people can actually understand, and I think they should get credit for that.
Casey, you have one thing you noted here from Facebook's terms of service in your report. I'm going to read it here, even though I don't understand it. Quote, you grant us a non-exclusive, transferable, sub-licensable, royalty-free, worldwide license to use any IP content that you post on or in connection with Facebook, unquote. Does that mean you're screwed?
I don't think so. What non-exclusive means, and that's a really common thing, that's actually a good term. It means that when you post your content there, you're giving them a license that is not just exclusive to them. So if you post something on Facebook, you can also post it somewhere else. And this is pretty common. And worldwide, this means they can use it all over the world, which Facebook is. Royalty-free means they don't have to pay you for it, which I think when you post to Facebook, you already know they're not paying you for it. Transferable and sub-licensable. Sub-licensable means that they might be able to license it to other parties. I feel like these are usually a just-in-case kind of thing, particularly with websites that might be bought and sold. I don't know of examples of Facebook sub-licensing your content, but it is possible.
Sub-licensing of content. I've been on the radio a long time. That phrase has never come up before. Amy, has this changed the way you interact with these online services?
Paul, it has not, because just like you, I don't have time to read all these policies.
How long does it take to read them? Casey, you both did this. How long did it take you to read maybe the top 10?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know, but these 30 that we analyzed, it would take you almost 8 hours to read them.
And then
250 words per minute, if there's, you know, 200 or 2,000 words in the policy, that's quite a long time.
That is quite a long time. And then after you've read it, you still may not understand it because it has things like sub-licensable in it.
Exactly.
I'm glad you're bringing this to light. Casey Fiesler and Amy Bruckman, researchers at the Georgia Institute of Technology. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
Great talking
with
you.
Thank you so much.
Our terms of service are you just need two ears and your radio on, and then you're with us on America Weekend. Thanks for listening. America.